This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening in San Diego? Great to be with you. Happy Monday to you. Don't forget, don't hate on Mondays. It's 1/7 of your life. You might as well enjoy and enjoy the next few hours with us. A little Gwen and Chris on 97.3 The Fan. Hanging out until about 5:30 today, then we'll send it on out to Petco Park. Sam Levitt will have the Padre pregame show. Tonight the Padres take on the Washington Nationals. First of a three-game series.
Padres. Sorry, who
is that? The Washington Nationals.
You sound like my
Washington.
Yeah.
You sound like my grandma.
I'm going to get a little Washington. The Padres did all right against the Brew Crew. Took 3 out of 4, although they did fall yesterday 6-2. Tony Gwynn Jr. back from a stint on the TV side of things. We'll be returning to the radio broadcast booth tonight. Tony, all in all, not bad for the Padres. They take 4 out of 5. If you go back to the Philly game, and that's a nice way to answer that 5-game losing streak. Although I don't think any of us should be surprised, because whenever they fall below 500, they come right back to it, and vice versa.
Yeah, no, they might even get a couple over.
They might
start to tease you a little bit.
Tease us, yes.
But to this point, this is how it's been, and so it's nothing really new. I think what's new is that they continue to do this dance with the new injuries that are affecting the position players now. So that's the only thing different. Yet they're still doing it. Lose 5, win 4. We'll lose 4, win 5 of 6.
Yep.
And it's just that is how it's been. And there's been some good things that have popped up in the midst of it, right? I mean, Randy Vasquez has thrown the ball pretty well. He hasn't been able to quite figure out how to get beyond that 5th, but I think it's coming based on what we've seen. It was unfortunate Michael King had that second. It was really an unlucky second inning.
He really was. I mean, everyone's going to say we're sticking up for him, but we are going to stick up for him when it's bloop, bloop, bloop like that.
There was very low exit velocity.
Yeah.
Very low in that, and I think 4 of the 5 hits, or however many they ended up. Maybe it was 4 of the 6 hits. But they get that 5, and he settles in, and he gives them 6, which was imperative based on how beat up this bullpen is right now. And when I say beat up, they've had to be used quite a bit. I mean, outside of King, Waldron twice, and Vasquez once, nobody has reached 5 innings. And Vasquez got just to 5, and so the bullpen is having to cover all of that. The 2 starts of 4 2/3, the 1 start of 3 2/3, the other start of 4, like that's a lot of innings covered, and they're in the midst of 26 out of 27. Yet they're still finding a way to win ball games, and I think the hope is everybody gets healthy, they go.
Well, right now they are back at the beloved 500 mark, and I did count it up today, Tony, because that's the kind of boring life that I lead. I have time to count stuff up like this. It is the 25th time already this year that their record has been exactly 500. So
25?
Wow.
Yeah, 1-1, 2-2, 4-4, 7-7. I mean, this is...
Oh, this is how you did it? Oh, my Lord.
They've been 500 25 times. I mean, that's really a lot. And the most they've been over 500 is 3 games. And the most they've been under 500 is 4 games. So the whole season has been played in that little area there. And
the only thing that would be more impressive than that is if you came back tomorrow and told us if they lead the league in most times at 500.
Oh, if I go through every team?
That would be incredible, Chris.
That would be the only thing that was more impressive.
Yeah, don't tempt me. But There's a pretty good chance I'm not going to do that. So I'll leave that up to the Elias sports people to figure that out. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it seems like we wake up every morning, they're 500. That's because they are. And, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll talk about this national series coming up. And, you know, look, they have to go back to facing left-handed starters. We can't avoid talking about that a little bit. They'll get Patrick Corbin tonight, who statistically is one of the worst left-handed starters in baseball, although he makes more money than everybody. Hopefully the Padres can finally break out of that malaise. But you said it, Tony. There were some good things over the weekend. Cronenworth had a monster stretch there, right? Five for five one game following a walk-off homer. Jackson Merrill continues to just amaze and delight. 12 extra base hits in the last 17 games. And even when he's making outs, the ball's going to the warning track. You almost can't take a right-hander out and replace him with a left-hander against Jackson Merrill anymore, because he's hitting lefties, I almost want to say, Tony, with more authority than he's hitting righties right now. And it's just been a delight to watch him go recently.
That's interesting. Let's look what his numbers are here.
I think he's still down against lefties,
To your point, it's up though. He was below 200 there. Now he's up over 200, 217 to be exact.
Yeah.
I think he's just getting better. I mean, this is the track you want. He's kind of been able to just be him. No added pressure. It's not like he has the pressure like Toddy had, right? Where he came up in everybody was expecting Toddy to be the savior. And quite frankly, he felt like he was, right? But he's been able to come and just play, right? The Manny, Toddy, Profar has even stepped into that light now. Crone, Arise now that we have him. I mean, you're going to all five of those guys before you get to Jackson, right? And I think that's allowed him to just learn at his own pace. I think the Padres have done a good job of giving him a break here and there, but not completely like taking him out against lefties. And I think that's why we've seen the improvement. If they're going to give him a day, yeah, it might be against a lefty, but for the most part, he's out there. He's been wonderful, man. He's doing such a fantastic job, and he's handling it to this point in stride like you'd want a 21-year-old to handle it. And it seems like he's having a blast.
And we're having a blast watching this guy. I don't know. I mean, Bradford Doolittle, who I pay very little attention to, Mr. Doolittle. But I do.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
We'll never get Bradford Doolittle on again.
Well, we're never going to have him on anyway. He's from ESPN Plus, so I have to pay extra money for his articles. But he has his first half awards of the season, and so I had to look at this and see where Jackson Merrill fell in his Rookie of the Year balloting. And look, it's better than where he has been, but I still don't think it's high enough. He's number four on the list. Two of the guys he has ahead of Jackson Merrill just left town. Brian Hudson, the pitcher for the Brewers, and Joey Ortiz, the third baseman for the Brewers. Neither of whom I think are better than Jackson Merrill, nor do I think Yoshinobu Yamamoto's been better than Jackson Merrill. He's on the injured list right now. So those are the three guys they have ahead of him. So I think Jackson's got a pretty good shot to be Rookie of the Year. And it's early, and I don't want to start heaping some pressure on this guy. But that's how good he's been, Tony, and it's just been fun to watch him. So
It's a good thing for us that Doolittle doesn't actually...
He doesn't have a vote, probably.
Do the voting on this. And if he does, he's just one voter. So,
right, yeah.
I find it hard to believe as many people as come into town and ask about Jackson that, you know, people don't know right now.
Yeah,
maybe outside of Mr. Doolittle.
They have to. If the Nationals are coming to town and they're not paying any attention to Jackson Merrill, that's on them. And that live at your own peril, because right now he's swinging a great bat. I will say that Doolittle did rate as his most surprising player the first half, Jerkson Profar. So there is that. And speaking of Profar, Tony, I'm really... I'm watching this guy play right now. Again, he got a big double and scored a run the other yesterday. Sat out Saturday. I just am worried about this guy's knee right now, and I don't know if I should be overly concerned. I don't know if he's, I don't know where the Padres are on this, but it's making me nervous almost every time he swings the bat right now that knee's going to buckle on him. And I hope he kind of survives this little stretch. And I don't know how this thing gets healthier, right? It's what, tendonitis in the knee, so I don't know if it gets any better. I'm just worried right now. Are you seeing the same thing, or are you comfy with him?
I'm not worried about his knee
giving
on the swing. I'm more worried about when he's hitting the ball in the gaps and having to, really go.
Yeah.
Or, having to score from second to home. Those seem to be the moments where he's at, where he has discomfort.
You know,
running for it hard in the outfield. Those seem like the time. It's not in the box that I see anything. It's just after he hits it and he has to run. That's why when he hit the ball in the gap, I was like, great. He can just kind of
jog.
He can coast to it. It's just when he has to turn it up that it looks like, man, that doesn't look great. And so the conundrum here is that, man, an all-star break would be great for him.
But he's not going to have one.
He's not going to have one.
Yeah.
And, maybe he'll be okay with getting to an all-star game and not playing. But I find it hard to believe a guy like Jerickson who has openly said that he wants to be an all-star.
Yeah.
Is just going to give that up. I can't imagine it.
Can't imagine it either.
It's one of those things. He's just going to have to – we just got to hope that he can get through it and that it – I think the trick is getting it to calm down. Right now, it definitely seems like it's inflamed and irritated. And when it's like that, it's hard for you to, do what it – because remember, he's been dealing with it all year, but it seems like last few weeks it's kind of – been irritated a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
He's had to miss time because of it.
And is there something to it, too, Tony, swinging the bat? I mean, you need your legs to hit for power. I'm not going to say that the ball he hit yesterday might have been a home run if he was 100% healthy.
No.
Maybe it just would have been short, but could that be something or no?
No, I don't think so. I don't see any of his power changing because of the knee. I just see when he's running, he's at a lot of discomfort.
All right.
I think that's why he's been able to maintain his numbers despite it being not feeling great.
Yep, he's still hitting a good 320. So, keep it going, Jerks. And also keep it going, Matt Waldron. He starts tonight for the Padres. We had him on Friday. It was one of my favorite interviews we've had this season, our Friar Friday interview. If you missed it, you can go back on 97.3thefansd.com and listen to Matt Waldron. But pitching tonight, and he's on a hot streak, 8 consecutive games. He's allowed 2 or fewer runs. So let's hope that keeps keeps rolling. And, it's kind of interesting because if this was April or May, everybody would be like, oh, no, Waldron's pitching tonight. But now it's, all right, Waldron's pitching tonight.
It's funny
how things change.
He's kind of the talk of baseball right now in regards to his knuckleball because I see articles all over the place like, who's the next guy to try the knuckleball? And like they have a picture of Matt Waldron. So he's doing good things. Great things.
Feeling great about Matt Waldron pitching tonight.
You should. I mean, he's been the best pitcher for the Padres in this rotation right now. I mean, I don't think there's any question. I mean, up until yesterday, Michael King could make a good case for it, but Waldron has been he's gotten deep. He's held some good offenses down, So, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing he's going tonight. As a baseball man, there is a part of me that's like, man, at some point, he's not going to have a good one. You just hope it's not today.
Yes, that is true.
Well, and as we do, you asked him several times about it on Friday, but, when he doesn't have a good one, those other pitches are...
He does. They're not
plus pitches, but they're good enough to get him through. So that's been one of the keys to his success, I think.
Real quick, switching before we go to break. Did you guys see SpaceX last night?
No.
Who?
Oh, have you ever seen one of these rockets been fired into space from the Vandenberg Air Force Base? Chris doesn't know. Tony knows, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I get out of my car last night.
Was this worth stopping the show for?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I get out of my car last night, and neighbors on the street are looking up in the sky, and I'm like, what are these people doing? And we all look up. We all thought it was an alien, Chris. I was hoping that one of you would see it to back me up on this, that it would look like an alien craft.
Didn't see it, buddy.
Okay, so this makes no sense then. I should have stopped the show. Someone says, what is he talking about?
No kidding!
It wasn't worth stopping the show, I see.
No, I'm going to be quiet now.
Coming up, another segment of Stupid Science Talk.
Hey! It looks like an alien craft.
I don't know. I'm feeling people probably tuned in for our thoughts on Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, maybe even Game 3 of the College World Series, or maybe even Game 1 of the Padres and Nationals. That is stuff we will actually get to when we come back on Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
2:22 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Padres, three-game set coming up, incoming, against the
Washington. By the way, that's not Matt Scraby, that's Dr. Matt Scraby.
Oh, yeah.
Scientist.
Scraby here.
People are all over your case in the chat because you wasted time on our show to talk about something nobody even knows what it is.
You know, I've wasted time on this show that had much worse things.
That's true. You've actually wasted time on this show talking about sports, so this was good
for
you.
Yes. I did not know SpaceX was happening last night. Okay, everybody, next time, before I bring it up, I will make sure I know that it's SpaceX.
Actually, nobody knew it was happening.
Okay?
Except
get your life together, buddy.
Your life together. You would think I would have it together.
Understand what the show's about.
Yeah. Now, on to the next. Padres, Nationals, three-game set. Chris mentioned it before we went to break there.
Yeah.
Three straight lefties.
Yeah.
Incoming. One is statistically not been very good.
No.
You have another one that used to be a Padre.
Mackenzie Gore tomorrow, yeah.
Yes. And the third one I don't know much about at this point.
Yes, a rookie.
I know he's a lefty.
Yes, I do too. Patrick Corbin's pitching tonight, and let's start with him, Tony. He's 1-7, and his 5.60 ERA is the second worst in all of baseball among starters who qualify in that statistic. So he's eminently hittable. His walks and hits to innings pitch ratio is 1.60, which is the worst among any starter in all of baseball. But I caution you by telling you that the second worst in that statistic was Patrick Sandoval of the Angels. And he seemed to have very little trouble shutting down the Padres a couple of weeks ago in Anaheim. This whole thing about not hitting lefties has gotten to it's gotten to, you know, a point where you've got to at least point it out.
I don't think we've not pointed it out.
And we've certainly pointed it out, right? I'm trying not to become repetitive is what I'm trying not to do. But it was April 24th, which is 2 months ago today, when they scored four earned runs against Ty Black of the Rockies in Denver. And that's the last time they've been able to, you know, score more than three runs against a left-handed starting pitcher. It's been 22 guys in a row, 17 of which have held the Padres to one or zero runs. And unfortunately, it's become a thing. They've got to have one night where they break out, and it doesn't seem that crazy difficult, Tony. I mean, it was funny at the game Thursday night, for example, against a right-handed starter, the Brewers, I think it was Bryce Wilson, they had four earned runs after the first six batters of the game. So, you know, it's doable. It boggles your mind that they haven't had one game where they put a couple of runners on and somebody's cleared the bases, but it just has not happened. So,
yeah, that has been the reality. They have another chance to to change it, the last two lefties they faced at home, they had some success against.
Now, a little bit, yeah. Not much, Oakland, but a little. Yeah.
They were Oakland Athletics, and so, you know, there's that part. But we'll see. Listen, it is what it is. They're not swinging the bat good against lefties at this point, whether you like it or not. They got to try to get better, especially if they're going to win this series, because they're going to play. They're going to face three of them.
They're going to win this series for sure. Yeah. And we've talked about this too, because every time, you know, when I bring it up, you say, you know, what's the answer? And then I don't say I don't know, and then you say, of course, nobody's going to know the answer. And maybe part of the answer is not really paying a whole lot of attention to it, because you don't want it to get into everybody's head up there.
Yeah, no, that's probably a good point. You know, at some point you just got to go out there and play and, you know, not think about it too much, because ultimately, you know, that does end up clouding the mind a little bit. And yeah, I think you're spot on with that. That would be their best. Now, can that be pulled off? We don't know. We won't know.
Especially when there's yo-yos like me on the radio who keep bringing it up every time. So,
yo-yos.
I mean, stop doing that.
That's part of it. I mean, not that's part of it. No, that's not what I meant.
I know what you're saying.
What I'm saying is it's part of it that we have to talk about it when it happens, right? So that can't be the reason why it doesn't happen. You know, I think, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but it seems like we don't have this same approach. We don't execute the approach against lefties the same way we do against righties, right? A lot of hits in the middle of the field. Against lefties, it's almost like, you know, it's bonus time for the right-handers in that lineup. You know, where, you know, typically when it's righty, you know, there's some certain things you got to have checks on to make sure you're right, in order when the righty's on the mound, make sure you're not pulling off, make sure you're letting the ball get to you. With the lefties, you know, when you don't see them that much, and, you know, it's the side where you get to, you know, feel more comfortable, if you will. What we've seen is a lot of weak fly balls against lefties. And so that's not who they are as an offense, though. What do we see against righties? A lot more line drives, hard ground balls. They haven't really been able to do that against lefties. So, you know, maybe trying to hone in on the approach that you normally have can be an answer. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see the lineup shortly. Sometimes you get it before we do, Tony, but haven't seen one yet. I know that
I'm having all kinds of computer issues right now.
So you may not see it before us then.
I don't know if the internet's working properly. My stuff isn't working properly. I know that.
It's the aliens from last night.
Stop. The biggest, you know, look, the biggest culprits against lefties are, you know, Jake, who is a left-handed hitter, so that's at least a fair thing. He's 209. He has one home run against lefties. And Fernando, which is mind-boggling because he's always crushed left-handed pitching. But this year, 233 and only one home run against a left-handed pitcher all season long. That's almost impossible to believe. And I mentioned the lineup because I don't know if Fernando's ready to get back in there yet or not. But hopefully tonight's the night that they can get something going against Corbin, who, as we said, has been imminently hittable all year long. Like to get a little something happening here, get two out of three, maybe sweep this series and go out on the road trip with a little room to spare. Talked about the 500 mark. Rays are currently not only 500 overall, 41-41, but they are 21-21 at home. They are 19-19 on the road, and they are 1-1 in Korea. So
either way, once you get to
500.
Once you get to 500, I just think that winning, you just win the series from that point on. You're even now. That'll in itself start to kind of move you away from 500. If you can get a sweep in there, great. But, you know, you're at 500. Get back to winning the series. You know, we've had a couple of these bad boys. It's probably just a road trip that clouds it a little bit, right? Because you go 1-5 on a road trip, It'll have you feeling like it was just a terrible. You guys have been playing bad baseball for a while, but then you come home, you went 3-4, win this series, you got a great homestand.
And one more, if we can just make a nice ask of the Padre pitching staff. Over the next 3 days, starting with Matt Waldron tonight, please do your best to get C.J. Abrams out. He's having a great year.
Yes, he is.
Hitting .270. He's got 12 homers, got 11 stolen bases. He's got an .817 OPS. I really don't feel like sticking up for that trade for the next 3 days. So, you know, do us all, us talk show hosts, a favor. And have C.J. have a tough series.
You better get your words together then, buddy.
I know, because he's been hard to get out.
Because, you know, typically when a dude gets to face an old team.
Oh, I know.
You know.
Oh, he's been great. He has been great this year. So, yikes.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's get to break. When we come back, Bryce Miller joins us next. Talk some Padre baseball. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.
All right, welcome back to the talk show. Sports, or, you know, science, whichever way you want to go. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Mr. Scraby, is always looking up in the sky.
Why?
You want to be the guy that discovers the illegal aliens. You are so into that.
Okay, illegal aliens, I'm not looking
not
to discover.
Not illegal aliens.
I am not looking to discover them.
Sorry, I apologize. Yes.
I guess technically they are illegal because they're not a resident of any country.
They don't have citizenship of this country. We're gonna
of
not,
this world?
We're not letting them in if they get down there.
If I were to find aliens... That would be scary.
No, that would make your life.
I don't want Scraby to find aliens.
I don't either.
He'll have all of us like terrified.
I would think if they found him, they would take him back and go, look, this is an example.
Creature.
This interesting creature we found.
Creature. I've been really into old aliens like abduction stories lately, and there was an alien abduction at the Coronado Hotel del Coronado back in like the 90s. It's one of the most documented alien abduction stories in history.
All right. Sorry,
right down the street. Chris fell asleep during my explanation right there. I just want everybody to know.
Sorry I brought it up. Bryce Miller is one of our all-time favorites. He's a San Diego through and through now, one of the great columnists for the San Diego Union-Tribune. Always happy to catch up with him. And it's been a while, Bryce. How you doing, my friend? Is he there yet? Or am I saying hello
to
an empty space? He's not on the line yet. Oh, my goodness. Scraby, make it work. No, I'm making fun of you, not him.
we're ready to go, Chris. I don't know what's going on over there in that seat. We got an alien running the show.
Man, the show is smooth today. Hi, Bryce. Welcome to the program. We are a veritable machine. How are you?
Yeah, it's impressive to hear when something is hitting on all cylinders in the way it sounds like you guys are right now.
We are not even close, Bryce. Not even close.
Impressive.
Yes. Also impressive is the consistency of our San Diego Padres, consistent in the fact that they can't get away from the 500 mark, sir. Yeah, I was joking.
They love 500.
Yes, they love it. I was joking with the guys. I counted this up this morning, so you're well than welcome to use this fun fact. But today now marks the 25th different time this season that they are at the 500 mark, from 1-1 to 2-2 to 7-7 to whatever, and to 41-41. Should we just make good with ourselves and feel like this is it, or do you think? You know, we can find a way to break away from this at some point.
You know, I still have not completely, trying to think of the right way to phrase this, but not given up on. I mean, you're not even to the All-Star break, but I guess history being lived best in a short time frame, just look back to last year. almost all these metrics and measures you can look at, one-run games, close games, extra-inning games, in so many ways, this team has proven it's better than that team, which might be kind of a backhanded compliment because there were some ways you could measure that last year's team in terms of at any metrics you would call clutch, they were almost historically bad, like mind-numbingly bad and confusingly bad in those kind of areas. But this team shows fight. You know, they'll lose five games and they'll have a series like they did against the Brewers. They won three or four. The Brewers lead a division in baseball. Now, granted, you can say the NL Central is not the toughest division in baseball, and you'd be right. But that's a team that leads the division. You won three or four. You also got to think that they have gotten to the point they're at. Could they be games above 500? Yes. Should they? Maybe. But would you have said at the beginning of the year, with Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove down for as long as they've been down, Xander Bogaerts out indefinitely, the kind of injuries that, you know, Tatis is, you know, dealing with, I mean, on and on and on. Rice has been dinged up. Machado has missed games. Nobody's playing at 100%, but you could say that about a lot of teams. But, you know, when you factor all that in, last season, everything they've dealt with to be right here, it's kind of cliche, but it's still all right in front of them. But if you'd have told me at the beginning of the year that, you know, the person who leads the team in OPS is Jurickson Profar and one of the arms you depend on most is Matt Waldron, I'd say, well, that's not a very good season. But somehow they just defy logic, and here they are at 500 again.
Such a good point made about this team not having really been completely healthy at very many points other than the very beginning of the season. When you look at some of the pieces that are not the core pieces, do you think that's a big reason why this team has been able to stay afloat, you know, throughout the course of the season? Because, I mean, up until recently, Toddy hadn't really got going. Manny hadn't really got going. But yet the Padres still, despite those injuries and guys not playing well, have still been able to stay at 500.
Right. I mean, it's because of some things that have kind of happened quietly, I think. Maybe not as quietly recently, but I think one of the best stories on this team is Jake Kronenworth. I think there were a lot of people who said after last season, and you know, the jury's still out. I mean, again, not to the All-Star break. There's a lot of baseball left, and you know, he needs to show that the start of this season can be the heart of this season and the end of this season. But, you know, he leads this team in RBIs right now on a team with Manny Machado, with Fernando Tatis Jr., with, you know, go down your list. It's maybe not as quiet since he went 5-for-5 the other night, but he has really kind of answered the bell on a lot of question marks after last season, and that's been big for them. You know, the pickup of Luis Arraez, just his ability to consistently put the ball in play through stretches has been huge for them. Jackson Merrill, who, again, that's another one. If you sit there at the beginning of the season and say, that's going to be your everyday center fielder, and Jurickson Profar is going to be your everyday left fielder, I bet 90% of the people, if they were being honest, would say, well, this team's in trouble. But here they are at 500. So what Profar's done, what Merrill's done in moments, in important moments, the pickup of Arraez, and really Jake Kronenworth, and go down that list, you can do it with pitching too, for a lot of reasons. For all the underachieving pieces of this team that fans worry about, Manny Machado, and there's a list there too, they've had a lot of things that have gone right. And all they've done is they haven't guaranteed anything, but they also haven't lost anything. So this next month is big for them if they can, you know, kind of steer this in a direction one way or the other.
Bryce Miller, always great catching up with him, columnist, San Diego Union-Tribune. Bryce, kind of your own rating or opinion. I'm sure you spent, you know, your share of time with Mike Shildt. Again, his ultimate report will be written at the end of this season. But what are your thoughts on Mike Shildt and some of the differences you see or similarities between he and Bob Melvin? You know, looking back, has this been the right move, et cetera? Give me a little thought or two on Mike Shildt and your dealings with him.
Yeah, he's almost the epitome of everything we've talked about, kind of the incomplete report card. You can't judge him too harshly one way, and you can't praise him too much the other direction. He's a bit like that 500 team right now. But for Mike Shildt, it's all in front of him, too. The thing he's got in his favor, I think, is that he's always been a winner in St. Louis. They made the playoffs every year. Everything you've heard about him from former players, and I stopped myself in mid-thought there because everyone said that about Bob Melvin, too, when he arrived. But obviously, that something in the front office didn't click, and maybe more than that, but at the very least, in the front office didn't click. And Mike Shildt is more aligned with A.J. Preller in that front office. That's a building block for sure if you're comparing the last two managers. But as we've all learned over and over and over, he's going to be unfailingly positive and supportive of his guys. And that's okay. And it drives fans and probably the media a little bit crazy at times because, it's the rose-colored glasses kind of sense of things. But, deep down, what's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to contribute to the cracks publicly? I don't think that's probably the way to do it. He probably deserves a little bit of the ribbing, we get for, the use of the word alibi, if nothing else. but some of that's deserved. But, he's not going to contribute to cracks. He's going to be the supportive guy. Yeah. And so far at 500, this team still can do what it wants to do. It's still in position to do that. So I think you said it perfectly at the beginning. The report card's still out.
Bryce Miller joins us here on Gwen and Chris. And Bryce, what was my question going to be? I had a good one lined up for you there. I'm sorry. There's a bunch going on in here right now that just kind of threw me off there for a sec. Chris, go ahead, man. I can't remember my question now.
Is Mike Shildt been too positive, Bryce? I didn't have one, so that's all I can come up with.
Only on this show that kind of stuff happens. Sorry.
That's right. Bryce, it's a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. I think you guys are too positive right now, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I think that's all of it, whether we're talking about the players or Shildt and all of it. It's just, I think what's frustrating the fans, but there also needs to be some, take a step back, take a breath. They haven't lost anything, and with everything they've dealt with, it gets really interesting from here on out for sure. And, I've had people ask me, should this team be buyers, should it be sellers, which is another question.
That's what my question was going to be.
See, I knew it. I knew it. That's why I went. I'm clairvoyant. It's a little early to know the answer for that, but I think it's a really interesting dynamic for the Padres in particular, because if A.J. Preller is really feeling job pressure for the first time, we don't know that for sure, but with what Eric Kutsenda and kind of the tea leaves, probably a little more than he has before at the very least, if not more, he doesn't want to be a seller. You've got the guy steering the ship who doesn't want to be a seller. But what if that front office decides with a little different direction? We need to be realistic about what the future looks like this season, especially after what happened last season. That makes that a really interesting question about what those conversations might look like behind closed doors. And again, the next month we'll decide what that looks like. But A.J. probably at the end of the day does not want to be a seller with the position he's in right now.
By the way, that was Kevin Franzen yelling in my ear as I was trying to come up with my question, which totally threw me off. But I did remember it since you kind of sparked it. So let's assume the Padres are in position. I mean, given the kind of, offseason they had in which they didn't spend a lot of money. I mean, what kind of moves can actually be made if they are indeed in it? Do you see it being one of those type of deadlines that we've had in the past where, you know, the Padres go for it, or will this be a little bit more measured, if you will?
Well, I think to some degree it has to be a little more measured just because they're up against it with the competitive balance tax. I mean, they worked so hard. As you said, they didn't make a bunch of big money moves in the offseason. The Arise deal is a masterpiece. I think.
Yeah, it is.
They somehow got a two-time batting champ. They didn't really spend any money on it. I mean, how do you even do that? So they got a bat like that that can hit as consistently as he does, and they figured out a way to do it that fit their plan, which is, you know, for people who don't fully understand the competitive balance tax, there are penalties that kind of compound as you do this, you know, in multiple years. And you can reset the clock by going under that number, and they're in position to do that. So I don't see any scenario where they take all that work and undo it by going over the CBT. They want to reset that clock. There's no reason to be spending millions of dollars at this point unnecessarily. But they're very creative, and A.J. Preller might be the most creative GM in baseball. And, you know, if there's a move to be made that's more prospect capital, you know, a key guy here.
All right, welcome back to the talk show. Sports or, you know, science, whichever way you want to go. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Mr. Scraby is always looking up in the sky.
Why?
You want to be the guy that discovers the illegal aliens. You are so into that.
Okay, illegal aliens, I'm not looking
not
to discover.
Not illegal aliens.
I am not looking to discover them.
Sorry, I apologize. Yes.
I guess technically they are illegal because they're not a resident of any country.
They don't have citizenship of this country.
Of this world?
We're not letting them in if they get down there.
If I were to find aliens, that would be scary.
No, that would make your life.
I don't want Scraby to find aliens.
I don't either.
He'll have all of us, like, terrified.
I would think if they found him, they would take him back and go, look, This is an example. This interesting creature we found.
Creature. I've been really into old aliens, like, abduction stories lately, and there was an alien abduction at the Coronado, Hotel del Coronado back in, like, the 90s. It's one of the most documented alien abduction stories in history.
All right. Sorry,
right down the street. Chris fell asleep during my explanation right there. I just want everybody to know.
Sorry I brought it up. Bryce Miller is one of our all-time favorites. He's a San Diego through and through now, one of the great columnists for the San Diego Union-Tribune. Always happy to catch up with him. And it's been a while, Bryce. How you doing, my friend? Is he there yet? Or am I saying hello
to an empty space?
He's not on the line yet. Oh, my goodness. Scraby, make it work. No, I'm making fun of you, not him.
We're ready to go, Chris. I don't know what's going on over there in that seat. We got an alien running the show.
Man, this show is smooth today. Hi, Bryce. Welcome to the program. We are a veritable machine. How are you?
Yeah, it's impressive to hear when something is sitting on all cylinders in the way it sounds like you guys are right now.
We are not even close, Bryce. Not even close.
Impressive.
Yes. Also impressive is the consistency of our San Diego Padres, consistent in the fact that they can't get away from the 500 mark, sir. I was joking.
They love 500.
Yes, they love it. I was joking with the guys. I counted this up this morning, so you're well than welcome to use this fun fact. But today now marks the 25th different time this season that they are at the 500 mark, from 1-1 to 2-2 to 7-7 to whatever, and to 41-41. Should we just make good with ourselves and feel like this is it, or do you think, you know, we can find a way to break away from this at some point?
You know, I still have not completely, trying to think of the right way to phrase this, but not given up on. I mean, you're not even in the All-Star break, but I guess history being lived best in a short time frame, just look back to last year. Almost all these metrics and measures you can look at, one-run games, close games, extra-inning games, in so many ways, this team has proven it's better than that team, which might be kind of a backhanded compliment because there were some ways you could measure that last year's team in terms of at any metrics you would call clutch, they were almost historically bad, like mind-numbingly bad and confusingly bad in those kind of areas. But this team shows fight. You know, they'll lose five games and they'll have a series like they did against the Brewers. They won three of four. The Brewers lead a division in baseball. Now, granted, you can say the NL Central is not the toughest division in baseball, and you'd be right. But that's a team that leads the division. You won three of four. You also got to think that they have gotten to the point they're at. Could they be games above 500? Yes, should they? Maybe. But would you have said at the beginning of the year, with Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove down for as long as they've been down, Xander Bogaerts out indefinitely, the kind of injuries that, you know, Tatis is, you know, dealing with, I mean, on and on and on. Rice has been dinged up. Machado's missed games. Nobody's playing at 100%, but you could say that about a lot of teams. But, you know, when you factor all that in, last season, everything they've dealt with to be right here, it's kind of cliche, but it's still all right in front of them. But if you'd have told me at the beginning of the year that, you know, the person who leads the team in OPS is Jurickson Profar and one of the arms you depend on most is Matt Waldron, I'd say, well, that's not a very good season. But somehow they just defy logic, and here they are at 500 again.
Such a good point made about this team not having really been completely healthy at very many points other than the very beginning of the season. When you look at some of the pieces that are not the core pieces, do you think that's a big reason why this team has been able to stay afloat, you know, throughout the course of the season? Because, I mean, up until recently, Toddy hadn't really got going. Manny hadn't really got going. But yet the Padres still, despite those injuries and guys not playing well, have still been able to stay at 500.
Right. I mean, it's because of some things that have kind of happened quietly, I think. Maybe not as quietly recently, but I think one of the best stories on this team is Jake Cronenworth. I think there were a lot of people who said after last season, and, you know, the jury's still out. I mean, again, not to the All-Star break. There's a lot of baseball left, and you know, he needs to show that the start of this season can be the heart of this season and the end of this season. But, you know, he leads this team in RBIs right now on a team with Manny Machado, with Fernando Tatis Jr., with, you know, go down your list. It's maybe not as quiet since he went 5-for-5 the other night, but he has really kind of answered the bell on a lot of question marks after last season, and that's been big for them. You know, the pickup of Luis Arraez, just his ability to consistently put the ball in play through stretches has been huge for them. Jackson Merrill, that's another one. If you sit there at the beginning of the season and say, that's going to be your everyday center fielder, and Jurickson Profar is going to be your everyday left fielder, I bet 90% of the people, if they were being honest, would say, well, this team's in trouble. But here they are at 500. So what Profar's done, what Merrill's done in moments, in important moments, the pickup of Arraez, and really Jake Cronenworth, and go down that list, you can do it with pitching too, for a lot of reasons. For all the underachieving pieces of this team that the fans worry about, Manny Machado, and there's a list there too, they've had a lot of things that have gone right. And all they've done is they haven't guaranteed anything, but they also haven't lost anything. So this next month is big for them if they can, you know, kind of steer this in a direction one way or the other.
Bryce Miller, always great catching up with him, columnist, San Diego Union-Tribune. Bryce, kind of your own rating or opinion. I'm sure you spent, you know, your share of time with Mike Shildt. Again, his ultimate report will be written at the end of this season. But what are your thoughts on Mike Shildt and some of the differences you see or similarities between he and Bob Melvin? You know, looking back, has this been the right move, et cetera? Give me a little thought or two on Mike Shildt and your dealings with him.
Yeah, he's almost the epitome of everything we've talked about, kind of his incomplete report card. You can't judge him too harshly one way, and you can't praise him too much the other direction. He's a bit like that 500 team right now. But, you know, for Mike Shildt, it's all in front of him, too. The thing he's got in his favor, I think, is that he's always been a winner in St. Louis. They made the playoffs every year. Everything you've heard about him from former players, and I stopped myself in mid-thought there because everyone said that about Bob Melvin, too, when he arrived. But obviously that something in the front office didn't click, and maybe more than that, but at the very least in the front office didn't click. And Mike Shildt is more aligned with A.J. Preller in that front office. That's a building block for sure if you're comparing the last two managers. But as we've all learned over and over and over, he's going to be unfailingly positive and supportive of his guys. And that's okay. And it drives fans and probably the media a little bit crazy at times because – you know, it's the rose-colored glasses kind of sense of things. But, you know, deep down, what's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to contribute to the cracks publicly? I don't think that's probably the way to do it. He probably deserves a little bit of the ribbing, you know, we get for, you know, the use of the word alibi, if nothing else. but, you know, some of that's deserved, but, you know, he's not going to contribute to cracks. He's going to be the supportive guy. Yeah. And so far at 500, his team still can do what it wants to do. It's still in position to do that. So I think you said it perfectly at the beginning. The report card's still out.
Bryce Miller joins us here on Gwen and Chris. And Bryce, what was my question going to be? I had a good one lined up for you there. I'm sorry, there's a bunch going on in here right now that just kind of threw me off there for a sec. Chris, go ahead, man. I can't remember my question now.
Is Mike Shildt been too positive, Bryce? I didn't have one, so that's all I can come up with.
Only on this show that kind of stuff happens. Sorry.
That's right. Bryce, it's a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, I think you guys are too positive right now, possibly. I don't know. I think that's all of it, whether we're talking about the players or Shildt and all of it. It's just, I think, what's frustrating the fans. But there also needs to be some, you know, take a step back, take a breath. They haven't lost anything, and with everything they've dealt with, it gets really interesting from here on out for sure. And, you know, I've had people ask me, should this team be buyers? Should it be sellers? Which is another question.
That's what my question was going to be.
See, I knew it. I knew it. That's why I went. I'm clairvoyant. It's a little early to know the answer for that, but I think it's a really interesting dynamic for the Padres in particular. Because if A.J. Preller is really feeling job pressure for the first time, we don't know that for sure, but with what Eric Kutsenda and kind of the tea leaves, probably a little more than he has before at the very least, if not more, he doesn't want to be a seller. You got the guy steering the ship who doesn't want to be a seller. But what if that front office decides with a little different direction, we need to be realistic about what the future looks like. This season, especially after what happened last season, that makes that a really interesting question about what those conversations might look like behind closed doors. And again, the next month we'll decide what that looks like. But you know, AJ probably at the end of the day does not want to be a seller with the position he's in right now.
By the way, that was Kevin Franzen yelling in my ear as I was trying to come up with my question, which totally threw me off. But I did remember it since you kind of sparked it. So let's assume the Padres are in position. I mean, given the kind of, you know, offseason they had in which they didn't spend a lot of money, I mean, what kind of moves can actually be made if they are indeed in it? Do you see it being one of those type of deadlines that we've had in the past where, you know, the Padres go for it, or will this be a little bit more measured, if you will?
Well, I think to some degree it has to be a little more measured just because they're up against it with the competitive balance tax. I mean, they worked so hard. As you said, they didn't make a bunch of big money moves in the offseason. The Arraez deal is a masterpiece, I think.
Yeah, it is.
They somehow got a two-time batting champ. They didn't really spend any money on him. I mean, how do you even do that? So they got a bat like that that can hit as consistently as he does. And they figured out a way to do it that fit their plan, which is, you know, for people who don't fully understand the competitive balance tax, there are penalties that kind of compound as you do this, you know, in multiple years. And you can reset the clock by going under that number, and they're in position to do that. So I don't see any scenario where they take all that work and undo it by going over the CBT. They want to reset that clock. There's no reason to be spending millions of dollars at this point unnecessarily. But they're very creative, and AJ Preller might be the most creative GM in baseball. And, you know, if there's a move to be made that's more prospect capital, you know, a key guy here, something there, is it an arm? Really, it's hard to answer that question because what's it look like with Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove, for example? Are they in a position where they have to have a starting pitcher and they don't really have a choice? What's the market look like? What do those phone calls sound like? So it'll get really interesting. But, you know, he's one of the most creative in baseball, if not the most creative, and he'll use that around the deadline, I'm sure.
Bryce, we have about a minute left. It's been a scintillating visit so far. You've actually been great. We've been completely off base. I'm going to finish with this.
I'm the host a little bit.
Yeah, you should. As a matter of fact, if you want to do the last couple of hours, it'd be my pleasure.
Yeah, hop on. Sure.
Is AJ Preller playing for his job the last 3.5 months? Do you get any feeling that's a possibility this time around, or is AJ Preller given, you know, regardless of what happens, the nod based on the fact that they had to reduce payroll?
Yeah, I don't know if definitively if anybody can say that. I mean, we don't really know Eric Kinsenda. We don't know him in the way certainly that we seem to know or thought we knew Peter Seidler. And I will say personally, I knew Peter very well. I wasn't the only one. There are a lot of people who did. He was very supportive, but he was an unflagging supporter of AJ Preller. And you never felt that pressure. Anytime that question should have been real, and people asked it, he'd say 100% support, one of the smartest guys in baseball. We don't know what that looks like right now, and I think it's a fair question. And if this team misses the playoffs, still, even cut back with that payroll, I think it's fascinating what that might look like.
Last one for me. Bryce, and it's a completely change of subject, change of sports. I saw that Casey Stoney was let go from the Wave. What can you tell us about that?
Didn't see that coming. that's pretty incredible that she, you know, in the very first season, took an expansion club to the playoffs.
Didn't she sign an extension in January?
I think she did. And she signed an extension for multiple years, I think. I think there were a club option. That might be 2 or 3 years out. But then they won the Shield, which is the equivalent of winning the league in the NWSL. That's what her resume was there. And it has a feel of the first sign of trouble. Somebody got an itchy trigger finger. It seems like a quick hook to me. But what nobody's talking about, what I'm curious about, is behind the scenes where players talking to Jill Ellis or anybody else. I almost don't want to plant that seed because I know nothing about it. I don't know that that's true, but I wonder if there's more to it because the resume certainly doesn't say fire Casey Stoney.
Right.
Yeah, it was interesting. The Wave are 3-5-6 this year, but are still very much in a playoff hunt. But they changed their head coach. All right, Bryce, yeah. Thank you so much for surviving that visit with us today. It was not easy. Only somebody
I feel like they earned a merit badge.
Yes, we owe you big time for this one. We'll try to do better next time, and we'll look for if you'll allow there to be a next time. But we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Bryce.
Yeah, always. Thanks.
You got it. Bryce Miller right there from the San Diego Union Tribune. Yeah, that's a little surprising story, Tony, this Casey Stoney thing. They've only given up 13 goals all year, but they've only scored 12. And maybe that's, offensively they've struggled, but I don't really know. They're kind of in the middle of the standings. It's a weird
They
weird
did
move.
Sign her to an extension on January 24th of this
that's
year.
What I thought.
Contract went through 2027 and then a mutual option for 2028. So at the very least, she's getting paid for 3 seasons.
Well, that part's good for Casey Stoney, but the Wave will have to look elsewhere for a coach. Gwen and Chris will have to look elsewhere to get some rhythm going here with hour number two. We'll see what we can come up with next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.